The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right. Hi, gentlemen. How's everybody doing?
How you doing?
Excellent.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Okay, let's get it. We got a lot of hoops to get into. Without Ja Morant, the Memphis Grizzlies still led the entire game until the final minute when Steph Curry took over and the tides turned. The battle-tested Warriors certainly know how to close out a game, completing the mission with a three-point victory and now take a commanding 3-1 lead over Memphis. Golden State lit it up in the final quarter Monday night behind the work of Steph Curry. He scored 18 of the Warriors' 39 fourth-quarter points, including the go-ahead free throw with 45 seconds left to take their first lead of the game. See you next.
Yeah.
How should the Warriors feel about getting the close win over the jawless Grizz?
I think they should be concerned because I've never seen the Golden State Warriors look this bad in the Steve Kerr era. Awful. They couldn't buy a basket. Now, maybe it was because they took Memphis for granted because they knew they didn't have Ja Morant. Maybe it was because it was just an off night. What I'm saying is, I watched the Boston Celtics play Milwaukee last night. I'm still looking at Milwaukee. I'm looking at Embiid returning. I'm looking at Miami being Miami. If the Warriors play that way, you ain't winning the championship. And that's how I'm measuring them by. Since they are my pick, they're your pick. That's how I'm looking at it. That's the litmus test that I'm measuring it upon. And so for me to watch them struggle the way that they struggled last night just to make a shot, I was not happy about it.
I think for me, I would look at it the other way. You still won a game when you played that way offensively? I'm sure it's happened. I can't recall watching a game in which I thought to myself, I've never seen Klay Thompson and Steph Curry shoot like this on the same night collectively. And they were good looks for the most part, and they couldn't buy one. Missed their first, I don't know, 15, 16 three-pointers as a team. They looked buried. Bane's throwing in half-court shots. They're picking up loose ball rebounds and putting them in, Kyle Anderson. And I'm saying to myself, it's Memphis's night. It's just their night. It's not going to happen tonight. And it's going to get real interesting now going forward. And what do? They resort to the greatness of Steph Curry down the stretch. He gets hot. And I look at it like this. A playoff series is checking boxes, getting to four. It's a race to four. It's really all that matters at the end of the day. The fact you could win a game when you played that poorly offensively. Jordan Poole, a shell of what he has been to this part in the postseason. And you still figured out a way to win the game. And look, Memphis contributed to it. Their late game shot selection, their ball management at the end of the game was terrible. They showed a lack of poise. It allowed the gate to be open. But I would actually look, if I'm Steve Kerr, I wake up with such a sense of relief that we could play that poorly and win a really, really important game. I'm still cool with Golden State. They did score 140 points in the last game. So this isn't a trend every night. We're just struggling to get to 90. They just put up a 140 spot, and they played horrible last night.
Yeah, and they didn't have Kerr, obviously, coaching.
All right. We knew with Ja Morant out that the Grizzlies' defense was going to be better. That was the case all regular season in the 25 games that he missed. I think what maybe is a little concerning is it seems like, at least in this series specifically, the Warriors' offense is toggling between the Warriors' offense that we have all come to know and love with the ball movement and player movement, and then there's just these quick possessions where there's no real ball movement or player movement, and they're taking tough contested shots. And some of that, of course, is the Grizzlies' defense. But when we talk about a championship and we look forward, you mentioned those teams, we look forward to potentially the Suns in the next round or a Boston Celtics in the finals, a Milwaukee Bucks, Philly. Like, they're going to have a lot of trouble scoring against those defenses. I think about the Celtics a lot. That matchup for the Warriors, I don't like that matchup for the Warriors.
I agree with you. I mean, it's particularly based on what I saw last night. Listen, the bottom line is this. We know what stirs the cup is Steph Curry. And then we get to Steph Curry combined with Jordan Poole and Klay Thompson. And when you see them looking normal, and then you think about Boston's defense and what they can do, all of a sudden you start looking at the Boston Celtics, particularly with the command. I said coming in yesterday when I was with JJ Tim, I said, look, Boston's got to win last night. I said, they don't win this series, it's over, because you're not beating Giannis three straight games. It's not happening. It's just not. There's no way.
They come back. They down double digits. They come right back in the same damn quarter. This is what they do. We know they can clamp down. And so when I'm looking at Golden State struggling the way that they're struggling, I'm saying to myself, look, you can't let that happen because you will not win the championship if that happens. Yeah, I think that Golden State is good enough to get by anybody in the West, including Phoenix, including Dallas. That is what my core belief has been all season long. And I believe they're going to win the chip. But then I'm watching Boston, and I'm watching their defense elevate the way that it has. And I know that Milwaukee doesn't have Middleton and stuff like that. But when you look at Boston, and then you start measuring what it's going to require in order for you to knock them off, if you're a team like the Golden State Warriors, you can't play like you played last night.
Problem I have. Well, here's the thing, though. Think about what we're all saying. We're talking about Boston matching up with Golden State. We're talking about Milwaukee matching up with Golden State. Well, you know what that would have meant? That would have meant Golden State just beat the Suns. How different are you going to feel? Assuming, look, I don't want to dismiss Dallas. Right. That's a 2-2 series.
I'm not dismissing any of
that. Right. So I want to be clear. That's what I expect to happen. I expect Phoenix and Golden State to play for a right to go to the NBA Finals. If we are getting that matchup, that means that Golden State just operated in a way to beat the Phoenix Suns, the best team in the NBA this season. So my point is, 2 weeks from now, if that's the matchup we get in the finals, maybe you feel a little differently about Golden State and what they must have had to do in that series to give you more faith that they can operate against Milwaukee or against Boston. Look, that was ugly last night. There's no way around it. They still dug out of it.
Yeah, but that's without Ja, though. I know that they're better defensively without Ja. You're right about Memphis. But my God, when he is on the court, with the things that this brother can do and how he galvanizes those troops offensively, to me, as impressive as Memphis has been this year without Ja and the games he has missed, it is still not that big of a deal that a fully loaded Golden State Warriors team beat a team without Ja. I don't care how ugly it is. It's not that big of a deal.
You don't think that was a missed opportunity, that they didn't close it out? I mean, 45 seconds. No, they led the entire game.
I'm saying it was a missed opportunity by Memphis.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's that big of a deal that a fully loaded Golden State Warriors team struggled that much against a Memphis team without Ja.
I agree with you there, because I don't think any win in the playoffs is a big deal. Any win is important in the playoffs, and you're obviously going to get another team's best shot. And the Grizzlies, as we mentioned, they believe they can win without Ja. They've proven they can do that. I want to be very clear. I've not changed my pick.
Okay.
I still think
you did that yesterday. You can't do that 2 days
in
a row. Okay.
I still think the Suns are going to represent the Western Conference in the finals.
Okay.
I do want to acknowledge
How confident about that?
Very.
Really?
Okay. Very. And really? I'm not a Warriors hater. But I think the Suns are the best team in basketball. I know they struggled game 3 and 4. I'm sure we'll talk about that series
just
later.
Just say very. That's very bold.
Yeah.
Very bold.
Yeah. That's the only way to beat it. You're going to put a pick out there. Until they're gone.
Really, I have to learn that one day. I don't know if I know how to
ride
do
it.
I'll learn how to be bold, Tim. I'll learn. It's going to take me some time.
I want to say
I'll
one
learn.
Thing, though, about right. the Golden State Warriors, and that is we know that Steph and Clay and Draymond and now Jordan Poole are so important to their team and what they do. But historically, the great Warriors team always had really good role players.
Okay.
And there was a stretch last night early in the fourth quarter. They're down 12. They're struggling to
score.
Otto Porter hits back-to-back threes. Jordan Poole hits Kevon Looney for a pocket pass. And Andrew Wiggins gets a floater. That stretch kept them in the game. Ultimately, Steph Curry took over down the stretch. But that's a promising sign for the Warriors. If your role players are stepping up in those big moments.
Okay. All right.
Okay. You guys want to move on?
Let's do it.
Okay. The Celtics took down the Bucks 116-108 to even the series at 2 games apiece behind Al Horford and Jason Tatum, each scoring 30 points. Horford and Tatum became just the third pair of Celtics teammates with 30 points each in playoff games over the last 30 seasons. Horford said Giannis Antetokounmpo's stare fired him up. Seemed a little personal, so he responded by setting a personal playoff record. Take a listen.
I don't really know what he said to me, but the way he was looking at me and the way that he was going about it really didn't sit well with me, and at that point I think just something switched with me in the game.
At the end of the day, like, I know what the deal is. The team knows what the deal is. We gotta go to Boston and try to win a game. Now, no matter what I feel, you know, it doesn't really matter. Emotions are for movies, you know, not for basketball.
I love that.
I like that line.
I love
That's
this guy. Emotions like are for movies. Yeah.
We and just, some we commercials, just let those by the way. Some
yeah, absolutely. So at times, fellas, it feels like Giannis has to do it all, especially with Chris Middleton sidelined with the MCL. Are the Bucks, JJ, asking too much of Giannis not having Middleton out there?
They really have no choice. They really have no choice. This is the issue you have without Chris Middleton. And we talked about this earlier today with Mike Greenberg. Their closing play is a 3-5 side pick and roll with Chris Middleton and Giannis, or a dribble handoff on that left side with Giannis and Chris Middleton. That's what they ran all last playoffs to beat the Nets, to win the Eastern Conference against the Atlanta Hawks, and to win in the finals against the Phoenix Suns. You're missing that right now. So much of the offense has to be generated by Giannis. And he's been in all sorts of different positions, and he's going against a loaded defense. Look, Drew Holiday is one of my dear friends. He is better suited in that third role on offense than he is in the second role. He's really struggled this series. As great as he's been defensively and as great as Wes Matthews have been defensively, there's just no one on their team with Drew struggles like this that can generate good offense. And that's not a knock. Like, Pat Connaughton has played really well this series. Bobby Portis has had some moments. Like, they have good role players. But for generating offense, it's Giannis and Giannis alone right now. And that's a real problem. And I think over the next, we talked about Toll earlier, over the next three games, with two of those games in Boston, you're asking a lot of Giannis, which is why I think the Celtics are going to win the series.
It's 2-2. Drew Holiday hasn't really injected himself into this series offensively at all. And the other guy, you mentioned Portis, and you said his name, and I'm thinking to myself, that's not a casual thing. This is a guy that averaged 15 points a game in the previous five. He's critical. So people might think of Bobby Portis as a role player. Mm-hmm. Number one, he is by far the number one guy in terms of energizing their team. And I've said it for the last two seasons. One basket out of Bobby Portis is worth four for most guys.
That's right.
Because of the way that their team and in that building reacts to him. He's been a non-factor the last two games. He needs to reemerge in this series. He's too important, and particularly without Middleton. Holiday can't play worse offensively right now. He hasn't injected himself. And despite all of that, they had a 12-point lead in the third quarter last night. I still have a lot of faith in Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think the question was, are they asking too much? No. You know, heavy lies the head that wears the crown. This is what you ask of guys this good,
yeah.
Right? And you don't have Middleton. This is what you expect Giannis to do and what I expect him to be. I expect Giannis Antetokounmpo to be the best player on the floor the remainder of this series and give the Milwaukee Bucks a chance to win it. And I picked them to win it. I picked them to get to the finals. I am sticking with that pick.
I think Giannis can very well be the best player on the floor and it still not be enough. But I'm not going to blame it on Middleton's absence, to be quite honest with you. I'm of the mindset that, you know what, Boston's defense is what it is. Middleton would be something to deal with. I get all of that. Grayson Allen and Pat Connaughton, you expected to deal to make a bigger contribution based on what you saw from them in the first round. But I think that the Milwaukee Bucks have enough pieces to make this interesting. I will remind everybody they had a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter. You know, it's not like Boston has run away with it because Middleton was out there. So I'm saying that the point is you have shown an ability to do some of the things you normally do even without Middleton. But to me, if you've got an Al Horford dropping 30, you ain't winning. You ain't losing to anybody if you're the Boston Celtics. You certainly don't anticipate that. You know what Tatum can do. You know what Jaylen Brown can do. The question is what they're going to do consistently. But when you've got somebody like Al Horford doing what he's doing, then guess what? That doesn't really have much to do with the absence of a Middleton. Again, he's significant, and I'm not trying to downplay that by any stretch of the imagination. But the point is, you can't have somebody like Al Horford making the kind of contribution he was able to make last night. If that happens, I don't give a damn what Milwaukee has. They ain't beating Boston.
Yeah, so I just want a couple comments to that. So you mentioned the fourth quarter lead. And again, this goes back to what I was saying earlier about closing games. They need Middleton to close games. Because if Giannis going against a set defense for what first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, you need someone else to create offense for you down at the end of the game. And Giannis can do it. I'm not saying he can't do it. Mm-hmm. We saw that at the end of game three. He scored a bucket. Drew got Tatum to fall. He made the floater. But with Drew struggling the way he does, this is where they miss Chris Middleton. I also wanted to mention, you said something. Pat Connaughton has been phenomenal in this series. He's been phenomenal.
He's got 11 points.
He's a spot-up shooter, a good defender,
yes,
a good rebounder.
Absolutely.
For what his role is, he's been phenomenal.
Okay.
The thing you brought up about Horford, they've got to figure out what they're going to do when he picks and pops. Because right now, they're staying in basically a drop coverage. They're throwing it back to Horford. And as we saw on that dunk, Giannis has now got to close out onto him. He's knocking down jumpers. He's taking him off the dribble. I don't understand why they're not switching that. Giannis is more than capable, whether it's Tatum or Brown or whomever, Giannis is more than capable of switching that pick and roll. Then you rely on your secondary defenders, size and strength to deal with Horford if he goes to the post. They've got to make that adjustment.
Massive adjustment there. And also, I just did a touchscreen on this because I looked at their late game execution offensively. They had possessions from an 85-85 standpoint the rest of the game. Their spacing was so poor at the start of the play. Part of it was because Giannis was gassed, and he was kind of camped out in the corner a little bit. But there were possessions where they had eight players on one side of the floor, nobody in the strong side corner for a Giannis drive or a Drew Holiday drive. No bailout pass waiting for help. You're playing into the hands of an elite Boston Celtics team. That's the kind of thing that a smart mind like Mike Budenholzer is going to look at, and they're going to be better in late game, just making sure they've got threats in the right spot to give Giannis more room to operate. He had people in his lap last. Now, part of it, he was tired. Part of it was the way they were set up offensively. Yeah.
But let me just throw this by y'all a second. I'm not. What I'm saying about the Boston Celtics, and this is what I want you to understand, JJ. When you look at the Boston Celtics, they seem to find a way to be there when it counts. So my assumption, and I'll admit it is an assumption, but I think an educated one, that even if Middleton was in the lineup, it would come down to the wire. That's why I point to what Al Horford did as opposed to what Middleton couldn't do because he wasn't in the lineup. I'm saying I know that Middleton is obviously an upgrade from a Grayson Allen, don't get me wrong. And you're right about Pat Connaughton, and you're right about Bobby Portis and how he needs to step up. But somehow, some way, when we've watched the Boston Celtics for the last three quarters of this season, when they've been one of the best teams in the NBA, what they've said to you is, we're going to be there. And if they're going to be there, and you got a guy like Al Horford coming, doing what he did, that is something that I don't give a damn what Milwaukee has going for them. You got to make sure that can't happen. We expect Tatum. We expect Brown. One or the other, if not both, like they did in game two. But in the end, if you let somebody like Horford or Marcus Smart or somebody like that get off like Horford got off last night, you're not beating this team if you're the Milwaukee Bucks. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Steven, I know you watch the games, and all I've done games with you. I did one of the Brooklyn Boston games with you. You can't act like you're surprised that Al Horford has a big game. He's been phenomenal in the playoffs. He's been phenomenal.
Hold on.
He went 6-for-6 in the quarter, and he had 30.
I understand but that. I'm not
he's
saying
been
that.
Phenomenal.
I love Al Horford.
He's been great.
He's a glue. He's a glue piece, a veteran. He plays on both ends of the floor. He can hit open shots. I'm very familiar with Al Horford's game. What I'm saying is 30 is 30. 30, bro. I mean, damn. Yeah, come on now.
He's had account for that if you're Milwaukee.
You can't account for that.
That's a playoff record for him last
night. He's had multiple games over 20. Like, it's not like he's all of a sudden. He's not like an 8-6 guy that's a role player.
No, but he's not
a really good basketball
player. He's not a 30-point guy. He's not hitting 6-for-6 in the fourth quarter. He's not scoring 16 points in the fourth quarter,
Jay. I want to say one other thing.
That's all I'm saying.
I want to say one other thing to the Middleton point.
Sure.
You know, while Legs was talking, they were showing clips of Giannis. Again, dribbling the ball at the top of the key, going against three guys in his face, loaded up. When they run those plays with Middleton, I don't want to harp on this, but when they run those plays with Middleton, what happens? Giannis is catching the ball on the move, going downhill, putting pressure on the rim. He's able to finish. He's able to dish. Middleton is able to pull up. That is what they are missing right now. They are missing that in the fourth quarter. So Giannis can be great for as long as you want. But when they get to crunch time, they need Chris Middleton.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
All right. So who are you taking now? You're staying with the Bucks.
Oh, yeah,
tell
I'm
us why.
The Bucks. I stay because if I pick a team, I'm staying with that team.
Okay.
Yeah, or
ride or die? Like,
is that a subtweet of me?
It's a 2-2 series. My goodness. Yeah, I'm sticking with the Milwaukee Bucks. I'm banking on that man right there, number 34.
Is he the most mentally tough player in the NBA,
by
the way?
He had a psychological breakthrough last year. I mean, he's passed that hurdle. No moment's going to be too big for us. I am a little concerned. I am a little concerned.
Yeah.
He looks like he's got the yips a little bit at the foul line again. I am concerned about that. It didn't look good last night. He didn't look sure of himself.
Yeah.
But what he did last year and the barrier he broke through after past playoff failures, I'm just banking on his greatness and his mental toughness.
Yeah, Giannis, no one handles the media better than him
Giannis
right now.
Giannis is great. Giannis is going to get his. He's one of the great ones. There is no doubt about it. But two impediments potentially to his success: perimeter shooting and free throw shooting. We all know this to be true. It's not that he can't make them. It's that more often than not, he doesn't. And when you look at a series like this, could something like that
deficiency come back to bite you, you're damn right.
Did you both pick Boston?
I picked Boston
and you're
in seven.
Are you both staying
picked,
with
I
it?
I picked Boston. Yeah, I'm staying with it.
I wavered because I said my pick was whoever wins this series is going to the finals.
Okay.
But after yesterday, I will be definitive.
Okay.
And I will say I think the Celtics are going to win. And by the way,
well,
I'm a Giannis
so
believer.
I'm just
I'm a
so
Giannis
proud of
believer. Right. I remember you knocking Giannis early in the season, yes, talking about right. how he can't finish
Wait
games.
A second. Am I
No, hold on.
I didn't say he can't finish
Wait,
games.
There's a lot
my
happening
dear
right
friend,
now.
Did,
I never
I'm not
that.
Doubting
am
Giannis.
Here, but
I'm saying,
am I hearing what you just said, Chris? You're saying, yeah, but you're saying you didn't definitively come to that conclusion until they make a comeback in the fourth quarter of game four, and now you're willing to say Boston because they got two out of three at home? You didn't say that before the series, that you thought definitively they would win the series?
Well,
how did you avoid that, by the
hold
way?
On a
that's
hold on
let
a second.
You do around
yeah,
here.
I've said, I've,
they don't let you do that
yourself.
Around here.
You asked me this last week, and I'll tell you the same answer. For months,
right.
I've said,
right.
Finals rematch. We got Suns-Bucks finals rematch,
yeah.
And then Middleton gets hurt.
Okay.
So now I'm trying to assess the Bucks in real time. You got to give me at least a couple games to do that.
You
got to give me a couple games to do that.
Here, they make you pick on a daily.
I've said Suns-Bucks since January.
That's true. You got to pick at the beginning of the series. You knew Middleton wasn't available at the beginning of this series. Why you gotta wait for? Now that's what we usually
Listen.
Say. But I'm gonna let you pass on that today. I'm gonna let you pass.
Listen,
I'm gonna let
you pass. He's just starting, so he wants to be right,
right
all the
yeah,
time.
He's the rookie.
They want to
after, after a few finals, he'll be like, he'll be making picks game one, ready to go, definitive. All right, guys, let's stay with this game. So a couple of dunks going back and forth after Giannis Antetokounmpo dunked on Al Horford early in the third quarter and gave a stare down, receiving a technical foul. Horford returned the favor in the fourth with a throwdown of his own. Horford drew a tech after the dunk as he inadvertently hit Giannis in the face in the immediate celebration. Stephen A. not happy about that tech. This is about the dumbest bleep I've seen in basketball. So Al Horford, why am I reading your tweet, by the way? You should read it in your own voice. So Al Horford drives in for a dunk on Giannis and comes down with his left arm accidentally on Giannis's face, and that's a technical foul. What the hell has happened to the NBA? That's as inadvertent as it gets.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, guys. You drive right, but you come from the right wing, you drive right, you dunk it, you come in from the baseline, basically, you dunk it on Giannis, you come down, your arm hits his face, and that's a technical foul? Come on, y'all. Come on, y'all. Somebody got to speak up about this. We can't, listen, the NBA is going to do what the NBA is going to do, but public pressure forces people to reflect upon things from time to time anyway. And this is one of those things that we got to sit up there and just say to yourself, come on, can we play basketball, please? You know, Giannis went down because it was an and one. He got fouled on that play by Giannis. And because on the way down, you hit Giannis in the face, that's a technical foul? Come on, y'all.
Sorry.
It's just too much. It's just too much. These calls are ridiculous. I'm sick and tired of replay, by the way, taking all day, every day. I mean, damn, I got time to cook dinner by the time they finish evaluating a particular play or whatever. You're almost on the verge of getting as bad as baseball with how long games take because of what you're doing to slow the game down with all of these damn video replays. It's getting a bit ridiculous. That was not a technical foul. He came down. His arm came down. He hit him in the face. So what? Keep moving on, especially since you called the foul against Giannis, who fouled him on a play.
Can I ask you a question before I sort of answer the question about the Al Horford technical? Do you prefer that they don't have video replay? Because you want them
me
to get it right.
Me personally,
you want them to get it
me
right.
Me personally, last 3 minutes of the game.
That's it. But what
last
about
3 minutes of the game.
What about if there's a hostile act? They should call that in real time. What about if off the ball someone hit somebody
we're talking about, you've got to review all this. We're
stuff.
Talking about things that when you're talking about violence, talking about harm that has been done to somebody else.
I'm not just talking about violence. I'm talking about all the plays that occur throughout a game that they review.
Right.
And Twitter, us the next day,
right.
We're all in an uproar if they get it wrong.
We're usually in an uproar in game deciding situations. Stuff that is subjected to human error, even when it's missed, it's par for the course. It happens. I saw in baseball an umpire call a guy out and ruined a perfect game. I forgot the name of the pitcher that was pitching in Detroit. You know, that umpire was crying. That official was crying after the game because he realized how wrong he was. Something like that is incredibly egregious. But at the end of the day, even though that shouldn't have happened, when you look at an NBA game, if something takes place in the first or the second quarter for something, for crying out loud, stuff happens. You're going to make calls. You're going to miss calls.
What are they reviewing in those situations? Reviewing, generally speaking, early in the game, hostile.
All right, well, let me ask you.
No way around it.
Let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question. How many times have you found yourself in a situation where a play was reviewed and we still saw the referees get it wrong? It was reviewed. And they still got it wrong.
Game 5, 2014.
Okay.
Western Conference semifinals. Mm-hmm. Reggie Jackson tipped the ball out of bounds. Mm-hmm. We saw it on tape. Tony Brothers elected to give OKC the ball back.
Okay.
I'll stand by that.
All right, that's fine.
I'll stand by that.
But I'm just,
and we lost the game.
I appreciate that.
And we lost the game.
Somebody's still bitter. Somebody's still bitter.
It was right there.
I mean, nothing.
Hey, they didn't have to go far to recall him.
To recall that. Exactly.
This was last night in the hotel.
That's right.
Listen.
That's hilarious.
So
right off the top. Right off the top.
It's just like the other day we asked Jalen Rose about some issue that he had with a player one time, and right away he said, Ken Conley.
That's right.
He dropped it. That's, whoa, Ken Conley. No one even heard this dude. Jalen remembers that.
Jalen remembers.
So yeah. here's where I'm on both of these things. First of all, I agree that should not have been a tech. It looked bad live because it happened so fast and it looked violent. Then I saw the replay and I'm like, wait a second, man. His left hand was up because he's kind of shielding himself from the defender. That left arm has to come down at some point.
That's right.
Came down across his nose. And the other thing is, I said, Al Horford, he's either the smartest guy in the world or he genuinely didn't mean anything by that because he never even looked at Giannis.
Exactly.
He did it and he kept looking this way, celebrating, but he never did. If he did this, maybe a different story. He didn't do that. So I think that's where I fall on that particular call. As far as, I texted somebody during the game last night, a group chat. I'm like, man, how about the good old days when dudes just try to stay on their feet and guard a guy?
That's right.
Everything is just constantly baiting an official. Make a call. Make a call. Make a call. Any contact, boom, I'm on my back. Make a call. That, to me, is what's disrupting the flow of the game more than anything. I like the review in terms of getting things right. But all of these plays where guys, they're not thinking about guarding a guy through the possession, getting a hand up contest. It's how can I try to find a way to bait an official to put him in a tough spot to make a call right now. So many plays, guys are on their back. It's nonstop throughout the game. That's what frustrates me watching the game.
So there's a couple things to this. So on the review part, which you guys, I hear your complaints. There's a challenge every game. And like last night, on Jaylen Brown's fifth foul, Milwaukee used it because they called the initial play on Drew Holiday a block and they used the challenge. So they're going to review that. So are you saying there shouldn't be challenges, just to be clear?
I'm okay with the challenge. I think it's had a very minimal effect on the game, truthfully.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think it's really affected the game.
I agree with that. But the smart coaches that hang onto it for plays like that where it's an important foul, end the game,
I'll say this real quick about the challenge. I saw it again last night. Draymond Green took one. I mean, as soon as he hit the ground, he's going like this to Mike Brown. And I'm saying to myself, I'm a coach. You know what I'm telling my team?
Yeah.
Do not do this. You better be right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You better, because that one was a kind of hit, miss, bang, bang, block, charge. It really could have gone either way. But there are plays that's so obvious. It's so obvious you fouled a guy. And you're doing this, and especially if it's a star, the coach feels all the pressure to appease that guy. You're asking for this. All right, we're going to do it. And you go to the replay. We're like, why would you ask me to challenge that?
But let me go back to the original point that JJ and I were debating about. Human error is a part of life, just like it's a part of sports. You're trying to tell me somebody is going to fret over missed calls that took place in the first and the second quarter or something like that? I'm talking about when you talk about the last 3 minutes of a game, the last 5 minutes of a game, talk about a game being on the line, that's an entirely different matter. But before that, over the course of a game, you got plenty of opportunities to make up for any mistakes or any errors that may have taken place. We see every single play. Tell me what play that you see when a foul is called and a player ain't complaining. A player doesn't feel screwed over. A player doesn't feel that the officials got something wrong. We see coaches arguing with referees every single play. We see players arguing with referees every single play. It happens. To sit up there and act like every single damn play has to be reviewed is ridiculous. It has to stop. It disrupts the rhythm and the flow of action. actually enjoying watching the game. You trying to tell me, Jay, that you don't sit there, Tim Legler, you don't sit up there times, and we're watching the game, and it's like, damn, I ordered dinner. I'm waiting for it. I mean, they reviewing this play. I mean, it take this damn long to decide what the right play is? Come on, y'all. But come on.
Stephen A., again, you're talking about something, being able to review plays late in the game and not being able to do it earlier. But any play that they actually review earlier in the game has an impact on late game, i.e. a hostile act, i.e. a block charge foul, whatever it may be, that could impact a player's availability for the rest of the game. Say a star player gets his second foul, next possession down, tries to take a charge. There's a review on that. That's his third foul. He could be out the rest of the first half. Those are the plays. They're not reviewing whether or not the ball goes off someone.
But JJ, you're not bothered by it.
I'm not denying that it has an impact. I'm saying, so what? Okay. Live with it.
No, I agree with him to the extent that's really what they're looking at earlier in the game is the stuff he's talking about, right? It's not like it's every player doing that. My bigger issue than the reviews is the constant – acting job
with the players.
That defenders are doing that to me.
They didn't act in the 90s.
No, they did.
They didn't act in the 90s.
You didn't have dudes on their back. You didn't have dudes on their back to the extent. Last night there were four guys on the floor in one play.
I understand. It's a bit
Marcus
extreme
Smart
at times. But I mean, my God. I mean, listen, Shaq with Vlade Divac, Reggie Miller, and so many others. Come on now. There's a whole bunch of dudes that were planning on going to Hollywood long before they left the NBA. I mean, with some of the acting jobs that they put
forth.
That is absolutely
true. If
you
genuinely think that watching in a game today is the same in terms of dudes trying to take charges, bait a ref into thinking they just took a charge. But there is no comparison
I'm not denying that. What I'm saying to you is that there was a lot of acting going on before. The difference between then and now is this. The NBA has gotten to, I'm not talking about the players. I'm talking about the league office in terms of their heavy hammer that they bring down because they don't want style of play disrupted. You want more offense. You want less physicality. So the game is called tighter. And as a result, to alleviate some of those things. And as a result, we find ourselves looking at it. And it's like, wait a minute now. What the hell are you going to do next? Human error is a part of it, fellas.
Okay.
Just take it.
Agree to disagree. We all have different gripes here, except for JJ. He likes the way it is.
Yeah, but he remember 2014.
His walk back and forth to school wasn't so long.
Remember that.
Real quick, the recollection. All right.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X card. Earn unlimited 2X miles in everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, The majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's electricebikes.com. Some quick takes. Stephen A., as Fox has announced Tom Brady is joining the network as their lead NFL analyst when his playing career is over. Stephen A., are you surprised that Tommy Brady wants to get in the booth?
No, not at all. I mean, you stay around football, he's going to make about $20 million knowing him. And he doesn't have to get hit in order to make that money. You know, I'm happy for him. He deserves it. But forgive me if I don't care that much. I'm interested in seeing him play this year, trying to win another Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And call me when he's in the booth.
I think he's a brilliant mind. Yeah. I think he'll be phenomenal.
I think he's absolutely going to be great. He deserves it. I'm happy for him. But I'm interested in seeing him play. I can give a damn about him in the booth right now.
Okay, fair enough. All right, to the NBA, we saw vintage James Harden in Game 4 putting up 31-7-9 as Philly took both games at home with the turn of Joel Embiid and knotted up the series as it shifts back to Miami. Now that Embiid is back, we saw Harden show up. We're going to bring in Marcus Spears first for this conversation. Hi, Marcus. You got us?
What's up, Molly Q? I'm still laughing from Stephen A. personally not giving a damn about Tom Brady.
Can I say this?
And JJ, because you know, I know how nice you could be. Marcus, JJ could be a nice guy. JJ, don't let JJ fool you. He's a nice guy. Huh. Here's the deal. All right,
He's a nice guy.
I'll ask you both. Listen, we wish Tom Brady nothing but the best. We think he's going to do a great job. Any penny that he's making is well earned. We get all of that. Do we really give a damn right now when he's got the season? I'm asking y'all a question. I mean, I understand when he, like, if he's retired and he was in the booth,
okay,
that would be different.
Okay.
With him about to play,
right.
Do you really care?
All right. I wanted to give
the news. I'm very curious as to the
even though you're so biased. Like you're so biased.
You said 20. I bet it's more.
Way more.
I bet it's way,
okay, way
okay,
more.
Okay.
Yeah. It's 30. It's 30 to 40.
Okay. Hey, guess what?
You're so biased, though, man. If they made an announcement while MJ was playing in the league that he was going to work on the TNT team, you'll have 30 minutes on the damn show about it.
Can I respond to that before we move on? Ask Michael Jordan, what would I say? And he'll tell you, Stephen, they don't give a damn.
Okay.
Stephen A. don't give a damn because he ain't playing no more. Okay. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, I don't give a damn until he's actually doing it. When he's doing it, I'm watching. I want to see.
Okay.
Is he going to be as good as Tony Romo or whatever? But until then, he got a season to play in Tampa Bay. I'll see you when you get there.
Yeah. It's a big deal.
He'll be phenomenal in Tampa Bay.
When it happens.
And he'll be phenomenal in the booth, right? Like, all the man knows is greatness. But let's move on here.
Sorry, JJ. Sorry you got to go through this.
I know.
My apologies.
Constant distractions with Stephen.
Yeah.
Distractions.
You are all over the place, always. It's like trying to reel you back in constantly.
Did I do that?
Okay.
All right.
JJ, do you believe, JJ, can I get your attention now?
Sorry.
Thank you. We are in the playoffs. We got a game five tonight tied up at 2-2. Do you believe the Sixers can win this series?
Oh, the Sixers can win this series. And I said yesterday, I'm not going to flip-flop again. I said yesterday, I think they will win this series. You know, the Harden thing is great, and it's great to see him score over 30 points. It's great to see him hit four step-back threes. The reality is that's not who he is right now, night to night. He's a facilitator, a playmaker, and a darn good one, too. Like, he is still a really good basketball player. But when I think about the 76ers and sort of where I viewed them prior to the playoffs to where I view them now, two things have happened. Number one, we're 10 games into this run. Tyrese Maxey's averaging 22 on 50-40-90. And that has shifted Tobias Harris basically into the fourth option, where he's shooting over 50% from the field and averaging 18-8. The last 2 years in Philly, Tobias has been the second option. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure you're a championship team with Tobias as your second option. If he's your fourth option and Tyrese Maxey's your third and Harden's your second and Beans, you've got a much better team. And I think they right now, and this, oh, this pains me to say it. I don't even know if I can verbalize it. But right now, I think they're a better team than the Miami Heat. So I think they win this series. But ultimately the Celtics will beat them in the next round.
I think that Jimmy Butler just heard you say that. And Jimmy Butler's going to get you for that. You're a former team. He's going to get you for that. You know that.
Yes,
Jimmy Butler, you're going to hear from that brother because that's just false. He's not going to believe that, and I don't blame him for not believing that because one game does not a series make. We saw James Harden. It was great to see him do what he did because now we know he can still do that, and that was what our concern was. We was like, wait a minute. He ain't been the same since the hamstring injury. As a result, he seems to have lost a step, struggling to gain separation. The contested shots ain't falling the way that it used to. James Harden ain't what he used to be, and then he pulled back the clock and showed you in game four. Excuse me, I am that dude still. So let's see if he's going to do that in game five tonight, game six, and if there is a game
My
seven.
My point, though, he doesn't have to. He doesn't have to.
He has to.
No, he has does not.
To. He has to.
No, he does not.
He doesn't have to. I didn't say he has to score 30, but he has to be. He has to be the dude that's that threat that can make those shots in those crunch time moments. Yes, he does have to do that.
Let me get Marcus in here, and I want to move this conversation forward. Marcus, do you think the Sixers can now win the East?
Yeah, with James Harden being in this plus like he has the last two games. Listen, I don't look at the Boston Celtics or the Milwaukee Bucks, especially without Middleton with Milwaukee, and say that this is unequivocally better than the Philadelphia 76ers with James Harden playing at a very high level. The playoffs, and JJ knows this, Stephen A. knows this, the playoffs is about the others most of the time. But when the star cachet has to show up, it has to show up like James Harden did this last outing against the Miami Heat. Ultimately, though, and I've heard you guys talk about it, James is not the same guy. He doesn't have the blow-by ability. And that may be true, but we can get explosions from James Harden. We can get – if James Harden knocks down three or four three-pointers per game, the confidence that he's going to take in to this next one is going to – it matters what he did in the previous game. I look at before the season started, it was the Brooklyn Nets and the Los Angeles Lakers, where everybody thought. Now, people talked about the Lakers being old. Then it ultimately shifted to the Phoenix Suns versus the Milwaukee Bucks. Now Stephen A. is concerned about Golden State, but that's been his team all along, based on what they've been able to do in the playoffs, especially getting a win last night with that poor shooting. But when I look at Philly, and I think about the depth of the five, right? And JJ just went through it. If Tyrese Maxey continues to play at a very high level and you get James Harden vintage output, potentially not throughout the entire course of a game, but to your point, Stephen A., that you just made, critical moments, big-time buckets, and I think Joel Embiid cancels out anyone that is on another team in the East. I truly believe, if it's Giannis with Milwaukee, Joel can put up 35 if Giannis put up 40. If you're coming out with the Boston Celtics, Al Horford is not going to take care of Joel Embiid. So it's going to be about James Harden and his output. And if he can continue to build on what he did just now, they have a shot at winning the East.
Well, listen, first of all, if I had your glasses on, I'd look as good as JJ. I mean, the fact of the matter is you got a whole bunch of ifs all over the damn place, okay? But it ain't nothing definitive.
Excuse me.
I'm talking now. Sit back. You ain't intimidating me. You ain't here in Vegas with me. You in another city. I ain't got to worry about you, brother. Here's the deal. The bottom line is when you look at James Harden, we saw him show up in game four. Prior to game four, the brother, first of all, he didn't even attempt 20 shots in game four. He hadn't attempted 20 shots in the game since he arrived in Philadelphia. He hadn't had 25 points in the game for the previous 13, 14 games.
Yeah.
So what we saw in game four was an aberration based on what we've seen from him lately. Now, if he can do those things, I get what you're saying. I'm betting that he won't. I'm betting that Miami won't let him. I'm betting that Miami is going to roll down to South Beach and they're going to be ready for them tonight. And I got Pete to Philadelphia.
He just want to go to Miami.
So you know I'm going to hear. I'm going to hear a whole bunch. J.J. Redick knows I'm going to hear a whole bunch of people's mouths if Philadelphia ends up winning this series. Because how dare me have the audacity, the unmitigated goal to pick against them. But I'm doing it anyway. In seven, Miami will win tonight.
I'm not.
Philly will win game six. And Miami will go back and close the deal in a game seven back down there in South Beach. Because you know to me, anything in Miami is South Beach. You know, you know that. And that's, it's just that simple. You see, ain't no ifs. I'm just telling you what it is.
Man, let JJ say something.
Go ahead.
I just have one thing to say. Just an observation. But your thirst for warm weather or whatever you call
it. It is warm weather.
Thirst trap? Never heard that term?
It's called the warm weather. It's just the warm weather. Nothing else.
I just wanted to give it a moment.
But to answer your question, Malik, the Sixers can win the East if James Harden has if he builds upon what he just did, they have just as good a shot as any other team I'd have watched throughout these playoffs in the East.
Fair enough. We're up against it. I didn't ask you that exact question, though. Do you think they could win the East, Philly? Mm. I know you said this series.
They can.
Oh, here we go. You know you're starting to remind me of? Not even going to say it, but Stephen A. knows.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.